Welcome back to The Ticket. Tell me, Shruti, do you think time has gone really fast since we were here yesterday?
Yes.
Yeah, I think so too. Michelle, is it just me or has time gone? Has it been like 3 hours since the last show?
Four, I'd say four.
Is time travelling fast for you today? Something else I want to touch on just quickly. I got an email, a PR email about a DJ, right? And it was so funny. I opened this email and it said, 5 things you don't know about this person. First thing I was thinking was, who is it?
So there's a lot of
that
things
wasn't
you don't
on
know
there. Yeah. But I thought, imagine if you had to do an email like that about yourself. What would you put on there? Things that you don't know about Shruti.
I don't know. You don't know a lot about me, do you?
I don't think anyone knows much about you yet. You're quite a dark horse.
I am. And I like to be, I'm mysterious. That'll be one of the things I can put on there.
What would yours be, Michelle?
Number one, I'm intolerant to a lot of foods.
You've got a lot of these. You are as well, aren't you? Like healthy foods too.
Yeah, like
vegetables.
Yeah. The thing I'm most intolerant to is a raspberry.
That's
ridiculous.
That's really difficult.
I'm allergic to watermelon.
Huh. It's food themed. Number two.
Wow.
Would be, just thought of something.
I want to throw mine in. Peaches. I'm allergic to peaches.
Oh,
boom.
No fruit baskets, please, to the ticket. That's all we ask. You could kill one of us. Okay, we've got some great stuff on the way for you today. No ticket talk back, but we do want to know about adventures that you've taken, travel adventures that you think have changed you in some way. We've got a big one we're announcing on the show today that we want to tell you about, but we'd love your texts on that. Also got a ticket tidbit on the way.
Tickets tidbit.
Tidbit, a small and particularly interesting item of gossip or information.
So this article came out yesterday. It reads, Phoenix flights cancelled because it's too hot for the planes.
First thoughts?
Yeah, first thoughts is, I'm here in the Middle East, I want to know how hot is too hot.
Yeah, that's my first thought as well.
So I looked at that and apparently temperatures there caused about 40 flights in Phoenix, Arizona to be cancelled because the temperatures were reaching 49 degrees Celsius yesterday.
49.
I can't believe that somewhere is hotter than here.
Really?
I'm amazed at that, yeah. It's not 49 here yet, is it?
No, not yet, but it might be.
The other day I saw a 48.5 on the car.
Yeah, really?
On the weekend.
I never trust the car. I don't know where the temperature gauge is.
I know it's in the car and it's hotter out there, but...
Because if it's in the car, it can get up to, what, 150 in the car?
Yeah, because it's just standing there in metal.
Yeah.
Well... Apparently, American Airlines announced that it was cancelling dozens of flights yesterday. Also, a local Fox affiliate was reporting that the cancellations mostly affected regional flights on the smaller Bombardier CRJ airliners, which have a maximum operating temperature of 48 degrees Celsius. So it all comes down to what planes can handle in terms of the temperature. So the highest temperature, the higher the temperature is, the air becomes lower density. So in other words, it's thinner. It's the science part. So the lower air density reduces how much lift is generated on an aircraft's wings, a core principle in aeronautics. So that in turn makes the aircraft's engines need to generate more and more power, more and more thrust to get airborne. So it becomes more and more difficult for them to, these certain planes, to lift off. So that's why they had to cancel a couple of them.
I'm just waiting for the end of this story where Michelle does a big, so we don't need to worry.
Yeah.
That's coming, right?
No. It's only the certain planes, these Bombardier CRJ airlines, the smaller ones, the ones that have the lower temperature thing.
Like Fantastic. The propeller types.
No, I don't think it's that small.
Okay.
But I think they still have, like big engines under the wings, but they're just smaller airplanes. So, yeah, don't worry if you're going to the airport now, because a lot of people will be going, don't worry, the big jumbos and all those things, they can, I don't know what temperatures they can work at, but it's fine.
I did that thing of having my holidays early, and now everyone else is going on their holidays. Do you know who's not going to feel it? More than me, though.
Mark?
Or will feel it more than me. Mark Lloyd, yeah. When he gets back from his really long 5-week holiday on Sunday.
Oh.
Although with Eid, you know what I was thinking the other day? If Eid happens to fall and we do end up getting Sunday, Monday and Tuesday off work. Imagine that. Mark's already had 5 weeks. He should have to come in, right?
Yeah, he should.
I think Mark should come in anyway.
What's he going to do?
I don't know. There's some staples to sort out somewhere. In a drawer upstairs. We'll find something. All right, today we are interested to hear from you if you've ever been on what you felt like was a life-changing travel adventure. We've got one to tell you about. Have you ever been on a trip that's changed your life in any way?
I'm sure they have many, but let me think about it. Can I have a moment?
What about you, Shoots?
Well, I only think of last year when I quit my job, my previous job, and I decided that I wanted to travel for a month, and I just went to South of France, and I think that changed me quite a bit. And I think that for me was the life-changing experience as such, because I just studied for a month and just sort of, I don't want to say found myself, because that's so cliched.
But I know what you mean, though. Yeah, you had some time to yourself to get to know yourself a bit better.
Exactly.
Did you go alone?
I did.
Oh, wow. Those are the best trips, aren't they?
Yeah.
I think for me, it was a trip that I had to do at school.
Okay.
When you were naughty, which I was quite a lot, the teachers would organise a trip and they'd take all the naughty kids on the trip at once. I wasn't like an awful naughty kid. I was just like a quiet naughty kid. So I ended up on this trip with all of these rowdy kids, and they took us into the middle of nowhere, into the countryside, and we were city kids. And they made us do stuff like get up in the middle of the night and go orienteering in the dark with blindfolds on, go abseiling. Yeah, it was really tricky. And I think that changed me quite a lot.
And you decided not to be naughty anymore.
I decided not to be naughty anymore. But let us know today if you've ever been on a trip that has changed your life. Because this afternoon we are in conversation with our favourite adventurer here on The Ticket. And that is Adrian Hayes.
So what I do, I guess I'm a professional adventurer. I do this for sponsors. I do one big project a year. I'm a keynote speaker. I'm a leadership team and executive coach. I'm a campaigner. I'm an author. And I'm a singer and a guitarist in a rock band and a few more things.
And what did you want to be, if I asked you that question, when you were about 10 years old?
I wanted to be a big adventurer. And I did it, and I started it when I was about 16 years of age. You know, and didn't have the confidence or the self-belief or the tools, the techniques to do it. So it took many years, or say a long, to happen really. But as I said, not like a lot of people do it all the whole time. It's just one part of my working portfolio.
So that is what Adrian Hayes does for a living, all of that stuff. What did you want to do if I asked you when you were 10, ladies?
I think I wanted to be a dancer. Like a ballerina or a dancer of that, some kind of sorts.
And you did that for quite a while.
I did, and then I realised you don't get any money and it's a painful career.
Oh.
I wanted to work in a petrol station.
What? Like doing what? Behind the till?
No, actually pumping the fuel, really.
What?
Yeah, so I'll tell you the story behind it. It's not something random.
You have done so much better. Your parents must be so proud of you.
They always go back to you. They're like, remember when you wanted to work in a petrol station? Like, yeah, let's not talk about it. But it was one of those cool petrol stations, you know, where the tank was like on the ceiling. So you sort of like pull the pipe down and then you like plug it into the car. And I was like, oh, that's quite cool. I'd like to work here. And then, yeah, it just sort of stuck on. I guess
you dreamed bigger.
How old do you think you were when you decided that wasn't for you?
I think when I was about 14, and you know, gosh, I started getting interested in journalism, and then I was like, oh, maybe petrol
station.
4 years
you wanted to be in the petrol station.
Maybe I'll push that to the side. Let journalism come to the forefront.
What did you want to be?
I wanted to be, well, so I watched Top Gun when I was a kid.
Mm-hmm.
And I decided that I wanted to be like Tom Cruise in Top Gun, and I wanted to fly planes. Ooh. Like that.
Hmm.
So I decided when it came to choosing your GCSEs that I would choose them all based on that. And I could remember the teacher going, but you'd need geography, and you'd currently you're failing geography and you're getting a B in history. Are you sure you want to take geography instead of history? And I was like, well, am I going to need geography? She's like, well, if you're going to be a Top Gun, yeah, you would need geography. Like, geography it is then. Like, no one gave me a serious chat about really history would be a better idea. So I failed pretty much everything that I took.
Oh.
So it was all based on being a fighter pilot, which I'm not now, as you can see.
Oh, thank goodness for that.
A couple of questions are putting out this afternoon. What did you want to be when you were about 10 years old? And have you, like Adrian Hayes, actually managed to do it? Also, let us know if you've been on a holiday or a travel of any kind that you feel like has changed you as a person. We're going to come back and we're going to tell you about a brand new trip that Adrian Hayes is involved in. The best bit about it, you can go on this trip too. Welcome back to The Ticket with myself, Steph. We've got Michelle here as well, and Shruti, all through the show till 4 o'clock. Now, we're asking you this afternoon, have you ever been on a trip that has absolutely changed you? And we're going to go to the phone lines first.
Yeah, we have got Glenn. He's on line number 7. And Glenn, you said that you went on a profound journey, this one to Turkey.
Yeah, it is. Turkey. Turkey, wow. really eye-opener, very profound, very diverse. I don't know if you've been there, but a couple of Cappadocia.
I haven't been to Turkey myself, but what did you find so profound about this particular journey?
Just the age. This is so ancient, I mean, and diversity. If you've been to Cappadocia, it's all underground, it's caves, living thousands of years ago. The Christians were hiding from the Muslims during the back in the day. And then you go 3 hours down the road to a place for Makkali, which is just white terraces and hot pools surrounded by amphitheatres and tombs. And then Gallipoli, which is the recent history in the wars of World War One, and it just goes on. I mean, it is just so much. The Blue Mosque, the main downtown, the food, the people, the culture. It blew me away.
Amazing. So, Glenn, for you, it was definitely the fact that it's an old place and the history just made your life change. We're asking you epic adventures today, if you've ever been on one, to let us know about it and where you went and why it changed you as a person. And this afternoon, we are in conversation with our favourite adventurer here on The Ticket. He's called Adrian Hayes, and we're going to be speaking to someone on the show tomorrow, by the way. You'll like this. He is about 16 or 17 now, which is when Adrian Hayes started doing his adventuring. And He's doing exactly the same thing. He'll be on the show at about 2 o'clock tomorrow. Tune in for that, because it's going to make you wish you had been a better teenager. I can guarantee it. This kid is just awesome. And when Adrian says he's an adventurer, he really is. He's done some amazing things. It started with climbing mountains when he was 16. But that is not all he's done.
You know, kayaking, adventure racing, triathlon, and skydiving and deep sea diving and sailing, you know, the lot. The big projects, the big things the last 10 years. K2 was the world's second highest mountain on the Pakistan-Chinese border. And we had two attempts at that, 2013 and 2014. And tragically, the 2013 ended in disaster, but went back again to summit in 2014. That was a profound thing. And I should mention, I got a book which I've now written, and that will be out next year, early next spring. So Emirates Lit Festival, the book K2, the Tragedy and the Triumph, because it's a very powerful story that's coming here.
Yeah, the Tragedy and the Triumph. Adrian mentioned it there. His attempt to scale K2 in 2013. You can get a bit of an insight into that trip and that book via our Facebook page today in one of the videos that Adrian made whilst he was out there.
There's no flat spacing.
There is no camp at 7,000. There is no camp 4.
Reporting live from K2 Base Camp on the soap opera of the year. The Bold and the Beautiful was never as dramatic as this. An avalanche just going down the Cezanne route and has come straight across.
New Zealand mountain guide Marty Schmidt and his son Denali Schmidt were hoping to become the first father and son team to summit K2. Unfortunately, it seems they are missing, presumably swept away in a huge avalanche. Conditions were terrible on the mountain. They tried to push on up to Camp 3 despite big avalanches, and unfortunately, they've been missing since then.
Yeah, it was a big story that year. Do you remember that story?
I do remember, yeah.
Really, really sad. So Adrian actually turned around that year and came back down without summiting, and they went back the next year to do it in the memory of father and son. And he's done so many adventures. Another one of the big ones, though, was Canada to the North Pole on foot, guys.
Quite simply, it's the hardest challenge on this earth. There's just nothing like it, and that's why nobody actually manages to do it these days. It is brutal beyond brutality.
Yeah, but it sounds really, really tough. I don't think I could do anything like that.
So this one's the North Pole. Didn't we speak to another adventure you spoke to a little while, but did he do North Pole?
I did. Yeah, but he did a completely different trip. The trip that Adrian did is one that few people will ever do, and they just don't do it anymore because it's that hard. All the way from Canada to the North Pole.
Ah, my goodness.
And you might remember this. If you watched the video from that trip, Adrian did not pack much. Think about how much you're going to take on your summer holiday, and then listen to how much Adrian took from Canada to the North Pole.
4:10, Wednesday 7th. And this is what I'm going to be wearing. 3 pairs of socks, one's a vapor barrier. Underpants, fleece underwear, first set, second set, my polar pants, fleece jacket, second fleece jacket, my polo trousers, my polo jacket, a fur hat, balaclava, neck warmers, hats, wristlets, small gloves, inner gloves, outer gloves, snowshoes, boots, and a full pack. And this is all what we're wearing.
Amazing. How much stuff do you take when you travel?
He's like inner gloves, outer gloves. Oh my gosh, I'm so cold.
And when you see the video of him just scanning across the stuff, yeah, like that would probably fit in my hold all that I take on the plane with my laptop in.
Because yeah, he's got to carry it, right?
Yeah, he's got to carry it the whole way.
He's got to go light.
He was away for around 70 days. Two sets of underwear, guys. Did you catch that bit?
Yeah. Not for me.
But Adrian's also a lover of sailing. He's been on holiday recently, and we might actually in the future see some challenges on the water in years to come. You never know.
Just had a lovely week in Bermuda, part of the America's Cup sort of thing. I was speaking out there, doing some events, and I'm hooked on the America's Cup. If I could get in the team for 2 years' time, that'd be great. So I'd be sailing since I said about 16 or 17 as well, but what is fun about America's Cup is the New Zealand team, who are just beat pushing all boundaries. They're fantastic. Emirates Team New Zealand. But the front guy, the cyclist, he's an Olympic cyclist, he can't sail a rubber duck in a bathtub. He knows nothing about sailing, so there's hope for me yet. But I think my cycling will have to get up a little bit to scratch to get on the team. But it's so yeah, I love the water. Diving, undersea, water sailing, the whole lot. So it's just, you know, all these big adventures, you've got to be very clear why you're doing it. And that's why I'm very integral about why exactly I'm trying to do it. So K2, quite simply, K2 was about the gold medal of mountaineering. It's the biggest challenge wins. You know, I don't do these big mountains and say I'm doing K2 to raise awareness of cancer or something. You know, it's just not integral. So you've got to be clear. And I get as much fun going up into Rafael Kema with the hills with like great hiking friends as I do climbing a big mountain. But, you know, it's for enjoyment, or it's for a goal, or it's for a target, whatever. And so the sailing, the diving, the undersea work, you've got to be sort of clear about what you're trying to achieve. Because if you want to do a big project, most of the stuff's been done. So you're not going to, you have to do something extraordinary to get the sponsors in to make the publicity which pays for these things.
And that's really interesting, isn't it, when he says that, because there might be things that you really want to do. However, it does cost money to go on these epic adventures, and if you're looking for sponsors to pay for it, then they're going to want something unique, probably risky, because they want to get press about it. And when are press going to talk about it? When it is extraordinary, which limits you to what you can do.
Yeah, you have to keep pushing the boundaries. I remember we did Unusual Jobs a little while back, and one of them was with the sports clothes maker, and one of the jobs was to go and test the clothes in the most extreme environments, you know, go off to the craziest place to test this clothing.
I'm thinking hotel fridge.
Yeah, I don't think they'd hire you
no.
for that. They need you to go, like, as Adrian was mentioning, like avalanche, going up K2, that's where they want to see their stuff. So, yeah, you're right. It's how risky can you be?
And how risky do you want to be? Because with a lot of these personal challenges, you would want to know you're going to come back safe, right?
Of course.
Yeah.
I mean, would want to know I was going to come back safe.
Yeah, but I guess people who want to do such adventures know the risks that are behind it. So, you know,
that's part of it.
Yeah, that's part of it. I'm not saying it's okay, but, you know, it's part of something. You have to sort of prepare for it.
Well, Adrian does have a new challenge. Now, the best bit about this challenge is that you will come back safe and you can go with him on this challenge. Stay tuned to find out what it is next. Now, we're chatting to Adrian Hayes, who is an adventurer, a motivational speaker, because he's teamed up with Gulf for Good on a brand new adventure. Now, this music is a bit of a giveaway.
Well, this is a challenge with a difference. And look, I've been a board member for Gulf for Good, you know, recognised charity in the UAE for a few years, and I've now been ambassador for the last few years. And they came up, Brian Wilkie, the chairman, came up with an idea, you know, how about us doing something with you, with me leading a trip? Now, I have led a Gulf for Good trip before. I led a trip to Kilimanjaro, and that was very synonymous because 17 got to the top, not two within a few hundred meters, and only one guy failed the trip, and that was me. You're laughing. Oh, yeah. I can see you laughing. I fell Kilimanjaro so I was sick as a dog from altitude sickness. Altitude is the great leveler. No respect for fitness, quality, skills, ability, experience. You know, you get it or you don't. And Kilimanjaro, they just do it too quick. So, but Brian suggested during this trip where we bring in a mixture of a challenge, which is where Bhutan comes in, but also a week-long coaching program with me, a personal development program, which is my other job, of course. I do, you know, corporate development, leadership development, team development within, and coaching within corporations, and that's my sort of core work. So bringing the two together, and that's how we came up with this concept.
So personal development and an amazing trek in Bhutan.
Ooh.
Sounding good?
An all-round holiday, feeling healthy, mentally, physically.
Yeah, I think this is going to be the kind of trip that would actually change you. And as I mentioned earlier, you can go along on this trip if you want to, if you can raise the funds that you need to be there, of course.
We can take, I think, up to about 25 people. But what I will say, for the people staying there, oh, God, this guy's going to beast us. He's going to have us running up hills 15 times with ankle weights and rocks in the packs and all the rest of it. No, what I'm saying, it's on the website golfforgood.org. You know, it's not about climbing Everest, it's about overcoming the Everest within all of us. So I would put it a 50-50 on the beauty of Bhutan, which is one of the most amazing countries in the world, but also this whole thing about personal development. You get a week-long coaching. We'll be doing a lot of stuff, personal values, on goal setting, on comfort zones, on mission, on challenges, a load of deep sort of seated stuff. And, you know, people get a lot out of it. And I think the key thing is what I do off-sites in corporations. I mean, off-sites, they go off-site because if you do this stuff in an office or a home, we're all distracted by the Wi-Fi and the WhatsApps and the Facebook and Instagram. You get people out of this zone, mobiles away, no smartphones, no internet. We get really in touch with nature. You're operating on a different frequency. Your mind is on a different level, and that's where the real learning comes.
Yeah, I mean, we do all have baggage, like Adrian was talking about there, and sometimes just switching off and getting on a different frequency, no mobile phone, no social media, is exactly what you need, isn't it?
And Bhutan, isn't it said to be one of the happiest places on earth?
Yeah.
I think they have a gross domestic happiness, or measurement of happiness.
Happiness index.
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah, it's good. I listened to a TED talk a couple of nights ago, and there was a guy called Andy Paddicom who was on there. He's a former Buddhist monk. He's got a meditation podcast called Headspace, if you want to find it. But he was talking about after he'd lost two of his close friends and a family member within a short time, it changed him. And what did he decide to do? He decided to be a Buddhist monk and spend 10 years studying to do it. Have a little listen to him. Here he is on the TED stage.
People often ask me, you know, what I learned from that time. Well, obviously it changed things, you know. Let's face it, becoming a celibate monk is going to change a number of things. But it was more than that, you know. It taught me, it gave me a greater appreciation and understanding for the present moment. By that, I mean not being lost in thought, not being distracted, not being overwhelmed by difficult emotions, but instead learning how to be in the here and now, how to be mindful, how to be present. I think the present moment is so underrated. It sounds so ordinary. And yet we spend so little time in the present moment that it's anything but ordinary.
When was the last time you were in the present? I couldn't stop thinking about that after listening to it. I'm always either thinking about something that's happened or something that's going to happen.
Yeah, consciousness. Are you enjoying where you are right now?
Yeah.
Not thinking about anything else?
Are you actually feeling where you are right now?
No, I think you probably think later, oh, I was there. But I don't think it happens when you're in it.
But isn't that what it's all about?
Yeah.
I could not get that out of my mind. So here's some tips from Andy on how you do actually stay present.
It's interesting. I think over time, it's like, you know, almost like muscle memory. You know, if it's done enough times, it simply becomes stronger and stronger. But I think in terms of the, you know, how it's actually done. So if I think of a couple of examples, I remember getting told off once, guy, in one of the monasteries. And I remember one, I can't even remember now. I think I'd read a book or something in the library that I wasn't supposed to read or something. And I was given a task to do, and it was to cut the grass. And it was to cut the grass with a pair of scissors. At the time when I was doing it, at least for the first kind of hour or two of doing that, in my mind, I was just busy talking to myself.
this is ridiculous. This is crazy. Yeah. So stupid. La,
yeah.
La, la, la.
Exactly.
And really kind of just building up a lot of frustration and anger. It was entirely my own kind of doing that stuff. And I was kind of creating this tension in the mind and in my body. And at some stage, I think I remember just laughing to myself at the absurdity of it. But through having let go of that storyline and having let go of that tension, all of a sudden, I was kind of released from that story. And all of a sudden, it actually became quite a pleasant activity. So it's a really good example of how, look, the activity is what it was. I got to define the experience of that activity by how I was relating to it with my mind.
I just find this so interesting to think about. Have you ever had a situation where you've had to do that, like a really menial task, and you're just so in it that your mind is clean?
Yeah, that often happens to me when I'm doing washing, specifically clothes washing and folding of clothes. Mm. And I really enjoy it, and I couldn't understand why for a long time, why I enjoyed it so much. But it's almost like a type of meditation where you're just, folding a sock, and then you're folding this, and then you fold this, and you're just sitting there doing this. You can't be doing anything else, and your mind just kind of is quiet whilst you're doing your menial task.
I really think we need this kind of stuff in life. And with our fast-paced lives, you're always either checking emails. You feel like whenever you've got a moment when you're not doing something, you should be doing something, don't you?
Yeah. Mm.
I remember when I left Dubai 92 on The Breakfast Show, I had 2 weeks off and we just bought this place in Scotland. And the idea was finish work, go off for 2 weeks, then come back and start this new job. And I left and I didn't think I'd be sad about it at all because I'd done it for 10 years, excited about a new job. But it was a weird time of I'd grown up in that room, I'd had all of my 20s in that room. And it was such a huge shift in life that I just felt like really depressed getting on the plane.
Hmm.
And I just threw myself into jobs. Like I can remember spending 3 days in between floorboards, digging out with a screwdriver all of the grime that had gotten in between the floorboards for like 25 years. Hmm. And it killed my knees, but it was just such a turning moment in my life where suddenly my mind was clear. And I really think we in Bhutan could be life-changing, I would say, for some people, mm-hmm. if they wanted to do it. It's a good opportunity to find your headspace. If you just tune in, we're talking about Adrian Hayes, Gulf for Good. They've teamed up together to take you on a trip.
I hope you'll be on there yourself, Steph. You are the first person on the trip, of course.
I'm not sure I could do it, Adrian. I'm not sure I could handle getting to know myself that well.
Yeah, nice one. Yeah, actually, it's a funny point. Some people are a little bit frightened, but when you do go in this whole stuff. It's interesting. Everyone, all of us, our childhood, our education, our order of birth, our schooling, our parents, all this, everything comes around. We've got this stuff around, all of us, literally. And it's when you actually open yourself up and you think, recognize what it is. My stuff, what I've done, all these big adventures, that came because I wanted to escape as a child because I was so damn unhappy. It is, but you've got to recognize it, not deny it.
So if you have recognised it, if you feel like you have got stuff to deal with, it could be the perfect trip for you. Stay tuned. When we come back, Adrian's going to tell us when the trip's planned for, how much it will cost you. And he's going to break down this trip so you know exactly what you would be doing every day in Bhutan. Welcome back to The Ticket, where we talk about travel and the best events in your city. And today, adventurer and motivational speaker Adrian Hayes is on the show. He's teamed up to lead a trip to Bhutan with personal development built into this trip as well. Adrian, just tell us when the trip is planned for.
It is planned for the 27th of October through to the 4th of November. And we've just officially launched it. I know people listening to this now that, Eid's coming up and they're looking forward to this summer and breaks and away. And we'll be pushing it from September. But we officially got the permissions just a few weeks ago. I thought we'd announce it now. So when people start, the autumn comes around pretty quickly. Won't be long before we're all back to school and Eid al-Adha's over and we're, inshallah, we're all back to work. So so that's why we're mentioning it now, and then we'll be following up through the summer and then from the autumn.
It is tempting, isn't it, to take all of your holidays in the summer and not leave any for that period between end of the summer and then Christmas time.
Yeah, I think a lot of us think we'll take the break in the summer and then we'll make it through to the end of the year.
So don't do that. Just think about this. Maybe you want to hold a week back.
Yeah, we've done the week after the half-term holidays because we thought, half-term holidays, a lot of people go away themselves and the flights are busy and all the rest of it. So we've done a week after. And I would stress this is for women and men. It's not, it's ironically, most of the coaching programs I've done, I've been doing this for 15-odd years, they're They're about two-thirds women, one-third men. But it's suitable for both genders and all levels. It's physically tough, but it's very doable. You know, you don't have to be a K2 summiter to do this trip. But yeah, so keeping so that week after the half term, that's why we chose it at the end of October. And it's a great season for Bhutan.
And if you just tuned in, this will be the first that you're hearing about this Gulf for Good trip to Bhutan with Adrian Hayes in October. We're announcing it on the ticket this afternoon. Is Bhutan on your bucket list? Is it somewhere you've wanted to go and thought about?
Yeah, absolutely. Because of the happiness aspect of it, I want to go and see a place that has happiness as part of their constitution. I think it's absolutely amazing. And when you think of Bhutan, you think of those sort of monastery-style buildings nestled in the mountains, and you just take a trek up there and be amongst the clouds. It's very beautiful.
So let me ask you why you haven't gone yet.
Oh, because there's so many things on the bucket list.
For me, it's so Bhutan is close to Northeast India, and I've been to this place called Sikkim, and I've been to Assam, and that's in India. And I've always figured that Bhutan would be sort of like a personified version of Sikkim. That's what I would imagine. And I absolutely loved going to Sikkim. But I just feel like I need to plan that better, because the Sikkim trip was like a spur of the moment thing. And, you know, we just ended up there and I was like, oh, wow, this place is amazing. And I feel like a lot of Northeast India is unexplored in these ways. So I think, you know, yeah, definitely Bhutan is on my list. But I would start from Northeast India and then move to Bhutan, I would say.
Well, it's a place that Adrian Hayes is really passionate about. Let him inspire you with his reasons why he loves the place so much.
Yeah, I think Bhutan's got a lesson for the rest of the world. I mean, the way they approach things, they were the first to invent Gross Happiness Index. They've got this sustainable organic food. They want to go totally organic by 2020. And I'm going to give a good lesson, one of the presentations on sustainability. It's one of the most overused words in the world, but nobody knows exactly what it actually means. And it's about the linkage between the economy, society, environment. And you can't solve problems in any of them without solving problems in all three. And I would say 75% of the world's problems we got are because people don't understand this model. Bhutan's got it, and I hope to give the participants some real enlightened lessons on this subject as well.
I don't think I'd want to leave. Sounds idyllic, doesn't it?
Yeah, organic food till 2020, happy people everywhere.
Yeah, it sounds good. If you're interested in this trip, let's talk through exactly how it unfolds, shall we, Adrian?
Okay, so we will fly to Kathmandu on the Friday the 27th of October, day one. So we'll have a night in Kathmandu, and anyone listening who's been to Kathmandu in Tamil, it's a fantastic place. You can get amazing clothing for $5, for fleece jackets and waterproof Gore-Tex stuff. It's a fantastic place to go. So Tamil's there. Then we fly from Kathmandu to Paro. That's the airport in Bhutan. So we've got a nice, great views of Everest on the way. And Kanchenjunga, that's the third highest mountain in the world, which I should have been climbing this season, but I put it off, and I'm hopefully be climbing that next year. But that's on the eastern border of Nepal. So we fly to Paro. Then we have a climb science station day in Paro on day three. And we visit monastery, we do, you know, short sort of hikes, and got these whole pitches. And then we start the whole trek, for day four, five, six, and seven. Anybody who knows Bhutan, I mean, we put it on the website, but Tiger's Nest Monastery. If you just Google that, Tiger's Nest Monastery.
The really famous one on the side of the hill, isn't it?
This is, I think it's one of the iconic images of anywhere in the world. It's on the side of a cliff. And I just think, you know, that sort of sums up Bhutan. It's basically just kept this whole essence, this whole value separate from the rest of the world. It's not tainted by, you know, pollution and corruption. It's the least corrupt country in the world officially. It's got regulated tourism. It's got so much going for it. And this monastery is probably the highlight of the trip, Tiger's Nest Monastery. But I think the key thing with Bhutan, everyone who goes there, and so many people have said, and I've often said, Nepal is my favorite country in the world when I go into the hills, because it's such a great enlightening experience. And Bhutan is equally, if not more, that. And it's just getting in the whole culture and essence of the country. A very, very special place. Yeah, so that's what we'll be doing for that trek to day seven. And then we do a charity visit and then onward home.
And then Adrian mentioned a charity just then at the end there. On the last bit of the itinerary, that's where the Golf for Good bit comes in.
The proceeds of this trip, it's the same as all Golf for Good challenges, where volunteers will look out for sponsorships, either, you know, small personal sponsorships or corporate sponsorships, because we're putting the charity into the Mission Himalaya. We're a recognised, Golf for Good recognised, obviously, charity, Mission Himalaya, which is the NGO we work with up in the Himalayas. And they're doing a lot of work on the medical side, which is something I've also been involved in for my own project up in Nepal.
So with Golf for Good, when you sign up to one of these adventures, you are encouraged to raise the money for your trip rather than just paying for it.
Yeah, the concept of Golf for Good, when it started 20-odd years ago, was taking people on adventure challenges in a host country and all around the world. And at the same time, so they would raise money, at the same time they would raise money for a tangible project in that host country, whether that's a school, whether it's ambulances, whether it's a medical center, whatever. So you've got something that's actually tangible, that's been built with the money raised from Golf for Good. So it's grown on the challenges, about four or five challenges every year, which the charity does. And as I've been to places like Mongolia, with Borneo, with Nepal, Kilimanjaro, all over the world, basically. So that's the principle. And so this is, this is a similar thing. We're asking people to raise money for charity, but they're getting me on top. Now, that's probably not worth a lot, maybe, among most people's eyes, but just so you're getting a personal development program as well as a charity and as well as a great trek and adventure in the host country, which is Bhutan in this case. And we're going to be making this an annual challenge. That's an annual challenge. And it could be Bhutan, it could be Nepal, it could be the Karakoram, but somewhere, a Himalayan country where we do the same concept. And I do a weeks-long coaching program. You get a great country, you raise money for charity. Open to all individuals, members of the public, all ages, but also corporates as well. If there's a corporation that thinks of selling perhaps four of their leaders or managers or their high performers, whatever, four, five, six, whatever, that's very welcome as well. So we'll take all types on this trip.
And how much are people looking to raise in order to come along on this trip?
So we're talking 19,500 as a minimum dirhams. It's not a cheap place to Bhutan for starters. I mean, flights and permits, you have to pay a certain amount every day just for being in Bhutan. That's what they've kept it, sustainable tourism.
I think it's $100 a day.
Yeah, it's a costly place, but you know, it's something that if everyone who's been there says it's well worth it. It's on the to-do list you've got to do before you die. You know, go to Bhutan. So we've got that 90,000. Then a good percentage of that will go to Mission Himalaya charity. So that's what we're doing. The same concept as all the other Golf for Good challenges, but as I say, this is a bit of a different one that we're promoting and holding this autumn.
So you're looking at 19,500 dirhams if you would like to do this. And the charity side of it is a big part, of course. A little bit more about that charity that Adrian mentioned there. The people that you'll actually be helping by coming along on this Bhutan trip.
Yeah, Mission Himalaya is an NGO in Nepal. They've got, they had a human resources side of things. They had a travel side of things. And they're doing this extra work in the Himalayas and mostly Nepal, but basically setting up these medical centres to treat villagers who don't have the resources that we do, you know, in our great cities around the world. And so that's where the funds have gone from in the last few challenges to Nepal. But of course, medical centres have ongoing costs. We have to have doctors and nurses and staff to man them. So there's ongoing stuff going on. We're talking about another medical centre in another area. And so, you know, as I said, I'm involved in as well from my own sort of stuff, my own post-earthquake project as well. So they're doing a great job, and it's tangible work in the mountains in Nepal of giving people medical aid. But also, the great thing with charity as well, the key thing is you're trying to help people help themselves, and that's the key thing. So, and that's foremost of our sort of concepts we're doing. So they're doing a lot of work. Bidul Tucker, the CEO of them, has worked with Golf for Good for many years, and he's a good friend of Golf for Good and of Dubai and the Emirates, indeed.
So if you're keen to take up this challenge in Bhutan with Adrian Hayes, jump online. It's gulfforgood.org. That's a number for Gulf for Good. If you've just tuned in and you missed any of that, everything gets podcast. It'll be up on DubaiEye1038.com. Let's click on the ticket.